Right now, we just began a new school year, and for us, we have a senior once again in high school. And one of the trends nowadays is, I guess, for the moms every Sunday to post a senior Sunday picture looking back. And my wife did this with Gracie. She's doing it now with Ryan going through his senior year. And it's so interesting to look back at these photos. Because you look back and you see these sweet little children at you know, 3 months and 6 months and a couple of years old. And it's so easy to look back and remember so many good times. But the thing you don't think of when you look at those pictures, for the most part, is the rough times in there. You look back and you see, man, I love that smiling face. I love when they would come running to me and jump into my arms. We don't say, oh, man, I love when they woke us up in the middle of the night. Or I love changing diapers. Or I loved when they were hungry or they were crying and we didn't know why. And I wonder if part of the problem is we tend to remember the past as better than it was. We tend to remember the past as better than it was. And sometimes that distorts our perception of the future. Or even distorts the present or the present moment. Because we're thinking back to how good things were back then. Israel continually fell into this trap of looking back and remembering days gone by, the good old days, when things were better than they are now. God has spoken to Moses, and he has told him, you are going to lead the people out of Egypt. And God uses 10 plagues to lead his people out. And at the end of the 10th plague, it wasn't just Israel that wanted out of Egypt. It was Pharaoh that wanted Israel out of Egypt. It was the Egyptians who wanted Israel out of Egypt. Just go and be done. And God told them, you're going to prepare for this night when you're going to leave. You're going to make this exodus. And you're going to do it in haste, so I need you to be ready to go. And so, one fateful night, God calls the people out, and they flee from Egypt. And the Egyptians are so glad that they are fleeing, that they start giving them gold and silver and clothes and just saying, take whatever you want, just get out of here and leave us. And so the people flee. They flee into the desert, and then, for some reason, they're going to turn back. But listen to how they left. It says, when Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country, though it was shorter. For God said, if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by the desert road toward the Red Sea. The Israelites went up out of Egypt ready for battle. So God wants them to go a different route, a longer route that's going to take them more time so that they don't face war. But the people are ready for battle. They're ready to go. And to show that God is with his people, he sends a pillar of cloud that's going to go in front of them and lead them, and a pillar of fire that will be behind them to protect and shield them. There is guidance from God in front of them in a very, very visible way, and there is protection behind them in a very, very visible way. They can see clearly God is with them, God is leading them, God is guiding them, and God is protecting them. But yet when they arrive at the edge of the sea, God sends them into confusion. And it looks like this moment of mass chaos. And Pharaoh sees this and he says, I'm going to pursue them. And so Pharaoh and his army comes in full force after the people. Now remember, there is a cloud in front. There is the fire behind. God is protecting his people. It's very visible. But as Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us into the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Now listen to this. Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone. Let us serve the Egyptians. Right, y'all remember that? Where they're like, oh man, we love to make bricks. We're so happy making bricks. Now we get to make more bricks. It's even better. We're so thankful we get to make bricks. Y'all remember that part? That's because it didn't happen. That's because all they did in Egypt was cry out, God, save us. We hate it here. How do you go from this place of we hate this, we want out at any cost, to getting out and looking back and say, oh man, I wish we had it like the good old days. Man, if only it was as nice here as it was in Egypt. Right? How do you get to that point where you start to remember the past is this beautiful experience? If only we could go back to the way it was then and serve the Egyptians. Because that would have been better. It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. The people look up and they see. And what they see causes them to fear. Now think about this. They just watched God perform these 10 plagues. They just watched God lead them by a cloud and protect them with fire. And they're coming out, and then they see an army. This is too much. And it appears that they aren't really ready for battle. Right? That's what it says. They were ready for battle as they went out. But now the army stands in front of them. Are they really ready? Are they really ready to go fight Pharaoh and the armies? Because, I mean, if they had been ready, wouldn't they have just done that in Egypt? But I think that's one of the things that fear does. Fear makes us remember the past as better than it was. We're afraid because of what we see. We're afraid because of uncertainty. We're afraid because of the unknown. And we start to think, oh man, I really wish we could go back to the way it was back then. Because that was truly better. Because fear magnifies what Egypt provided. But fear also minimizes what Egypt cost us. They think back to this time where they were crying out, where they were saying, God, take us out of here. Right? Do you remember last week? Time and time again, the people cried out and God said, I saw your suffering and I heard and I'm concerned and so I've come down. And God comes down to rescue. And so they're seeing all of this right in front, but their fear makes them forget what God has done, imagine the worst outcome, blame Moses, and romanticize Egypt, thinking bondage was so great. And I think it's simply because of this. When we face uncertainty, we are afraid. And freedom will cost you to be uncertain. It will cause you to be uncertain. And you think, okay, that's great. But understand this. That is why people who are in abusive relationships go back. And you can look from the outside and say, how in the world could you go back to that? Well, here's the thing. I don't know what's forward, but I know it was behind. And I would rather stay in this place than step into a place where I'm unsure. It's why we go back to addictions. Because we know. It's why we long to go back to the good old days. Because we know. Because when we face uncertainty, we want to move back to certainty. And we can say, well, Paul says, walk by faith, not by sight. That sounds great. But it's a lot more difficult to do. Because it requires this intense level of trust. I think one of the most important jobs of a shepherd is to point and lead people into a future that does not yet exist. For Moses to stand before the people and say, we're going this way, and you need to trust and follow. Not knowing what is on the other side. Not knowing what's going to happen when Pharaoh's army catches up. We need shepherds to remind us of God's promise, I will be with you. And so they're frantically searching for answers. They are standing beside the sea, trapped in by the army, trapped by the desert. They're frantically searching for solutions, for a way out, and if necessary, a way back. And yet all around them is evidence of God's presence. Through what God has done, through what God is doing, and through His visible presence with His people. It is clear to see for me and for you when we hear their story. But when it's you and your story, or me and my story, it's not always as clear. And I tend to be really judgmental about Israel. How could you see all that God has done and not trust Him with your tomorrow? And I think that question is a question I must ask of myself every day. And so God comes to Moses and he says, Moses comes to the people and he says, do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you You need only to be still. Now, if you see an Egyptian army coming at you, do you want Moses to tell you, all you need to do is be still? Like what I would imagine, this is the William Wallace moment. Like, let's grab our swords, let's get ready, we're going to war. And Moses says, stand firm, don't be afraid, you're going to see God deliver you, just be still. I was never in the army. I don't know a lot about combat. My assumption is there's not been a general in history who came up with that as their strategic battle plan. There's the army. Just be still. Maybe for a moment, hide from the enemy so they pass on by. But I know you see them and they see you, just be still. Be still. Be present. And God moves the pillar to behind them. And it casts darkness over the Egyptians and light for Israel. And he says to Moses, I want you to take your staff, and I want you to stand at the edge of the Red Sea. And I want you to hold out your hands and speak to the waters, and they will part. And you are going to walk through on dry ground. And Moses speaks, and the waters part, and the people walk through. And once the people get through, the Egyptians begin to pursue, and Moses says, let down your hands. Or God tells Moses to let down your hands. And the waters cover the Egyptians, and they see them lying dead on the shore. But I want you to listen, because there's something really powerful happening in this text. But the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground, with a wall of water on their right and on their left. That day, the Lord saved Israel from the hands of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore, and the Israelites saw the mighty hand of the Lord displayed against the Egyptians. And the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and his servant Moses. See, and the question for Israel is, whose hands will you trust? Because they feared the hand of Pharaoh. But after seeing what God does, it says they fear and trusted the hand of God. What's really fascinating in the book of Exodus, the word hand shows up 88 times. 88 different times it talks about the hand of Pharaoh and the hand of God. And even Moses' hands. But the question is, whose hands will you trust? And God leads them out. He leads them through the desert, and they come to water, and it's bitter, and they can't drink it. And he provides water. And then they don't have food, and he provides manna that falls from the sky. And they are seeing time and time again. And don't forget, the entire time there's a cloud in front and fire behind. They have seen it time and time again. And yet now they arrive and again there's no water. And they cry out to the Lord. They cry out to Moses, give us something to drink. Give us water. And then, why did you bring us out of Egypt? They keep thinking back to how good life was in Egypt. Don't you wish we could just go back there? We had water and we had meat and it was so good. But the uncertainty of what lies ahead continues to cause them to look back. And they ask the question that really is probably the underlying question of all of their other questions, of all their desire to go back. And it's simply this: is the Lord among us or not? They arrive, they quarrel with Moses, they tested the Lord, and then they simply say, is the Lord among us or not? Because they don't see it. Because obviously, if God was with us, we wouldn't be struggling. If God was with us, we wouldn't be experiencing really difficult times. If God was present, we wouldn't be in this situation. And it's so easy to interpret hardship as God has abandoned us. And to make matters worse, the very next thing after they ask this question, the Amalekites show up and they attack out of nowhere. And it would be so easy to say, well, obviously we're experiencing battle. Obviously God is not with us. But God's presence shows up with his people, not through the absence of a battle, but by his presence in the fight. And he comes to Moses and he tells Moses that you're going to go up on the hilltop. And so Joshua fought the Amalekites as Moses had ordered. And Moses, Aaron, Hur went up on top of the hill. And as long as Moses held up his hands, the Israelites were winning. But whenever he lowered his hands, the Amalekites were winning. When Moses' hands grew tired, they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur held up his hands, one on one side, one on the other, so that his hands remained steady till sunset. So Joshua overcame the Amalekite army with the sword. And you would think, it's not that difficult. Just hold up your hands, Moses. But I don't care who you are and how strong you are and how much weight you can push. It doesn't take too long for the staff to become heavy and to feel the burden that if you don't continue to hold these people up by holding your hands up, then you are going to fail the people that I have called you to lead. And so you have Joshua and the army fighting. They go out. And Moses' hands go up. But the weight and the burden that he carries is too great. And so hands of Aaron and Hur go under. So you have hands up. You have hands under. And then you have hands on to fight this battle. Because the burden that Moses is carrying alone is far too great for him to bear. Moses is not a bad leader because he's tired. He's a great leader because in his humility, he allows others to hold him up. We do not need shepherds who pretend they never get tired, who pretend that they can handle it all, who pretend the burden is not great. We need humble men who remind us that we are all in this together. And that this is hard for me just as it is for you. And that sometimes the burden that we feel is far greater than what we can handle. Let me tell you something about our shepherds here. They love this church. And they love you. And more than anything else they do, they pray for you. And you can think, well, I've heard what happens in elders' meetings before. I promise you, you hadn't heard what happens in theirs. Because their agenda, for the most part, is prayer. And every once in a while, one of them will put something on an agenda that's not their business, and the other ones are just like, hey, we have other people that handle that. Let's get back to what we need to be doing. But here's what I can also tell you, is that the burden that they feel at times for you is heavy. They carry a lot. And when you're hurting, they're hurting. And I think they're so amazing at going and visiting in the hospital. And those are the types of men we're looking for. As I said last week, we're not looking for the businessman who knows how to make all the decisions. We're looking for those who know how to be shepherds of God's flock that is under their care. Or as Paul says, to keep watch over yourself and all the flock. Because we're going to have those moments. And those are the times we need shepherds the most. Not men who never get anxious, never get tired, have all the answers. But the ones who know who to look to when everyone else is afraid. To be a calming voice in a world of anxiety. What happens if there at the sea, Moses takes their anxiety upon himself and allows their anxiety to start to make the decisions? But he doesn't. He says to them, don't be afraid. Stand firm. You're going to see God deliver us today. Just be still. Those are the men that we are looking for. We need shepherds who help us trust God's presence when fear tells us he is absent.